Now notice this. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin, and sin, when it's finished, bringeth forth death. When the desire of the soul, having conceived, gives birth to sin, and the sin, having been completed, brings forth death. Now, this is a tremendous statement. You see, conception is the joining and union of two, and the desire of the soul joined to the outward temptation. You remember, the Lord Jesus said, if you're angry with your brother, you're guilty of murder, because it begins in the heart and moves out to the action. He says, if you look upon a woman to commit adultery with her, you've done it because of the fact in your heart is where it began. And that's where it always began. Is temptation sin? Of course it's not sin. The answer's definitely no. It's when the conception takes place, when the thought in the heart is carried out in action. Martin Luther expressed it in this rather novel way. He said, you can't keep birds from flying over your head, but you can keep them from building a nest in your hair. Sin is the consummation of the act inwardly and outwardly. And it comes because you and I have that kind of a nature. It bringeth forth finally death. It'll bring forth physical death finally. Ask the alcoholic about that. It'll bring spiritual death, and it'll bring eternal death. The habitual and perpetual sinner never had a line of communication with God. May I say to you, the question then is going to arise, can a child of God sin? And the answer is yes. But we need to understand that God never uses that at all. Now, I have not concluded this section here by any means. I want to move a little faster beginning next time. But I want us to see, because God is bringing us down, friends, right where we live today. And James is showing us that this easy morality that we have, this easygoing looking at sin today, God has no part in it whatsoever, and God will judge you. He says he'll do just that. Well, we'll have to hold that till next time, and until then, may God bless you, my beloved. Now, friends, we are in this very wonderful epistle of James, and we are in the section that's labeled the verification of genuine faith. Now, he's dealt in the first 14 verses that God tests faith by trials and temptation, but not the kind of temptation that we think of, temptation to evil. God does not test faith with evil. And the source of our temptation to evil does not come from God. And the very interesting thing is, it doesn't come from Satan either. He doesn't blame the devil for it at all. He made it very clear, every man is tempted when he's drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Sin is in the flesh. The temptation is out yonder in front of you. And he uses a very interesting word here, and he'll use it again. Then when lust hath conceived. And the word is actually to become pregnant. And conception is the joining and union of two. It's the desire of this old nature of ours joined to the outward temptation that is out there. And the Lord Jesus made that very clear. If you're angry with your brother, well, it will lead to murder. That's the way premeditated murder begins. And he says if a man looks upon a woman to commit adultery, he's guilty because it's in his heart and it has to be there and joined with the temptation. May I say to you that the question then naturally arises, is temptation sin? And the answer is no. It was Martin Luther that made the statement, you can't keep the birds from flying over your head, but you can keep them from building a nest in your hair. Now, sin, therefore, is the consummation of the act inwardly and outwardly. The temptation in and of itself, we all have an evil nature. There's no use trying to kid ourselves concerning that. We all have been tempted to do evil. And as we saw last time, Everyone has a weakness in the flesh. One person, it may be gluttony, and another, it may be gossip. And both are absolutely of the flesh. It comes within. It was only the Lord Jesus that could say, the prince of this world cometh and findeth nothing in me. It's very interesting the way this is stated here. When lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth. You see, there can't be a stillbirth. It's going to bring forth something. When that evil thought that's in the heart is joined to the temptation, and there is a birth of the act. It just can't be a still birth at all. And what does it do? It brings forth sin. We rationalize it today. We rationalize a bad temper. We rationalize gossip today. And we rationalize a lot of polite sins. And right now we are rationalizing away gross immorality. And when it's finished, it'll bring forth death. And that's a very interesting word, death. There are three kinds of death. There is physical death, and that always works itself out. You can be sure of that. And then there's spiritual death, and that's a condition, actually, of the lost man. Dead in trespasses and sins, that's the condition of all of us. And then there's eternal death. Sin works its way out, and it means primarily separation. And for a believer who's been born again, when that sin is born, that is, it becomes an act in his life, then actually it breaks his fellowship with God. And as we saw, if we say that we have fellowship with him and walk in darkness, John says we're lying. We're not telling the truth. You can't have fellowship with him and permit sin to continually happen in your life. Now the temptation comes, and we can come under great conviction even about temptation, of course, but that is something you cannot help. The great sin, I suppose, today is certainly this matter of adultery, of sex. And we've had so many letters on that. And it's something that every person has been faced with. It's not something new. I think that the emphasis that's given to it and the dress of the hour has led to the committing of adultery probably more than it has been in American history. Certainly, this is what pulled down the great nations of the past, along with the alcohol problem. Actually, wine, women, and song have brought down the great nations of the world. Rome fell from within. But temptation itself, and we want to make that clear, is not sin. Now, I read several years ago a very moving biography of John Wesley, of his younger days. As you know, this man came to this country as a missionary. And after he got here, he cried out. He said, I came to America to convert Indians, and who's going to convert John Wesley? He had a legalistic system, and he never gave up a great deal of that, and that's the reason the church that came from him were called Methodists. They had a certain method, and they emphasized holiness. But John Wesley, when he came to this country, he found himself in the white settlement where the governor that was appointed by the crown was. Well, he was a nobleman, and he was an elderly man, and he had married a young woman. She was very beautiful. Of course, the rich and the noble have always been able to get the beautiful, and that's the reason even today they're called the beautiful people. And she was a very beautiful young woman. Well, John Wesley lived there, and he came over as a single young man, dynamic, virile young man. He was, I think, probably one of the greatest preachers he and Whitfield the world has ever seen. Well, what do you think happened? Here's this young man that's here in this white settlement, going before the governor many times, having to because he's moving out among the Indians, and who would be in the governor's home? Well, it'd be this young wife. Well, I can tell you this, the young wife hadn't married this old boy for love, that was for sure. And here's this very fine-looking young preacher, her age. Well, what do you think took place? they actually fell in love with each other. In fact, this man John Wesley was so attached to her, and they had secret rendezvous, but never did anything out of line. But he suggested to her that they run away and live among the Indians. And she discounted that. And she's the one that encouraged him to go back to England. She said, "I believe God's got a great work for you to do. And it could never work out with you as a missionary and a young minister to run away with me. And we're hooked." Only I'm sure she didn't use that statement. But there was no way out. And she urged him to go back. And he went back. But this biographer said the night the ship had to wait for the wind to come up to put out, it was a sailing ship. And when the word was given to get on board, why, she went down to tell him goodbye. And it was the first time that John Wesley actually ever held her in his arms. Now, that was temptation. And it says that he started on board, got on a gangplank three times and came back to her and said, "I'm going to stay." And each time she'd tell him that no other way but for him to return to England. And he returned. I've always felt that that was the background for the fact that John Wesley's wife that he finally married, you know, had a habit of getting up in the service and telling everybody what a great sinner he was. And I don't think she ever spelled it out, but she apparently knew something about that background. And John Wesley always took it. He'd just stand there till her tirade is over. Then he'd begin to preach. Imagine a man having that kind of a wife. But John Wesley went back and was saved one night at Aldersgate, and I'll not go into that. But the important thing is this. That was temptation, and that was the temptation of the greatest sort for that young man and that young woman. But the temptation was not sin. But had he run off into the woods, lived among the Indians with her, that would have been sin. And I have encountered that in my ministry now several times. A man came to me, a fine-looking young man, and talked with me several years ago. He said, "I've fallen in love with a very beautiful girl. I want her to be mine." Well, I said, "Have you asked her?" And he said, "Well, not exactly." Well, I said, "Why?" He says, "She's married." Well, I said, "You better give that notion up right now." Well, he said, "I want to ask you, would it be wrong for her to get a divorce and for us to get married?" And I said, "I think it certainly would be. I happen to know the couple." He said, "She'd be willing to." I said, "Doesn't make any difference." Now, I said to him, "You've been tempted, and I mean tempted a great deal. But I said, as a child of God, you'd never be able to get by with it." And I gave him several instances of cases where they thought they could get by with it and could not be happy. And I know a couple like that today, childless. They're old now. And how pitiful they are, because they did that very thing as young Christians. It's tragic to see people who think that they can get by with it. When lust conceives, it bringeth forth sin. That's the only kind of little brat that can bring into the world is sin. And sin will bring forth death. It'll bring forth separation, fellowship with God if you're a child of God immediately. And he'll judge you for it unless we judge ourselves, so that you don't get by with it. And this, I think, is very important for men and women to see today. Well, that man went out. I tried to put the fear of God in him. He was a wonderful Christian. He'd sure been tempted. He came back a week later, and he said to me, "Dr. McGee, we made our decision." Well, boy, I froze. I thought it was the wrong one. And he says, "We recognize that in this life, we could never be married, that we never could be joined together. That's entirely out of the question for us." And he says, "I'm just asking God someday, probably in heaven, to let us be together." Well, I don't know about those things. I have no answer for anyone like that. I've always felt that if in heaven you didn't want to be with somebody, you didn't have to be with them. And if you wanted to be with them, that you could be with them. And if he wants to be with her in heaven, I think it'd be perfectly all right. They're neither given in marriage there. And he says, I've asked for a transfer. He was with a very large company, and to another city. I don't think a month went by before he also, after a morning service, shook my hand, told me goodbye. He was leaving. Well, temptation. There's a lot of that today, my friend. And Christians say, oh, the devil tempted me, or something happened. My friend, the temptation can't conceive until it's joined with your evil nature, that desire of evil nature. And when it is joined together, the important thing is that it'll bring forth sin, and sin eventually bring forth death. And it breaks the fellowship with God, and that is a death, by the way.